Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Beautiful Saturday. No longer are we in summer, approaching the holidays. Things are getting colder. Your bodies are changing. Flu season is about here. Some of you have the flu. I know that. I see what happens across my desk. Welcome to today's show. We're going to talk about infection today. Infection, particularly one type of infection, because I think it typifies where we've got to start to bring the evolution of our perception of infection to a new front. And that infection is called Lyme disease. So much of it around. So ambiguous a diagnosis. So many ways, theoretically and literally, to go about proving that you have it. I'd say about one out of every four people that I see that are told they have Lyme disease are never tested correctly. There's lots of misconceptions about Lyme. And worse yet, people with Lyme disease that get it chronically are really on the wrong path. There's a special use for classic allopathic infectious disease medicine with antibiotic therapy that's absolutely critical in the early stages of Lyme. Critical to be done correctly, not incorrectly. Critical to be done at the high dose level in the acute phase of Lyme. But what happens to a lot of people is they don't get it in the high dose in the initial stage. It goes chronic, and then the misconception is you're going to get it by going after it with the chronic use of antibiotic therapy. And those unfortunate people that have gone down that path suffer for years. So we've got a lot to cover today. Put on your thinking caps, but it's not just about Lyme. That's the concept here. Today's show is not just about Lyme disease. It's about bringing your perception of what we call infectious disease to another level. Now, the guy that tried to do this is a gentleman. He's a microbiologist, very well credentialed. He's a professor. His name is Paul Ewald, E-W-A-L-D. And Paul Ewald, a number of years, wrote a great book that I read years ago called Plague Time. And what Plague Time was saying is tons of diseases that we think are just, well, the cell goes screwy. Cancers, autoimmune diseases are really infections. Heart disease is really infection. And this, of course, was proportional to the improvements in technologies. When we biopsy organ tissue with more and more powerful electron microscopes and better staining techniques, better diagnostic techniques, we found that if we looked, we found all sorts of devious little infections there that we never thought were there. And off this, a lot of the microbiologists started to theorize, speculate, in some cases prove that a lot of what we call just plain old, say, heart disease was really an infection, or renal failure was really an infection at the root of it. That's still up for grabs. There's still a ton of debate about that. One thing about infection, and this is going to parallel wisdom given to us 150 years ago. So we're going to go way back in time to look at the history of infection. But one thing about infection, when you have diseased tissue, infection loves to live there. So it's the cart horse problem. When Ewald wrote the book and talked about cancer as an infection and different types of ailments, heart disease as an infection, autoimmune disease as an infection, was he simply just noting that infections found at the site, viruses, bacteria, parasites, are found at the site of infection, or were they really causative? And of course, this is still up in the air. We're going to run with that concept today as it relates to Lyme disease. But to get technical, or to get, I should say, let's stick conservative for a while. Those of you who are not familiar with Lyme, yes, it's a bacteria that's transmitted through a tick bite. And that tick is a deer tick, a black-legged deer tick. And it often, not always, it often makes some sort of a red spot, which classically is a bullseye. And you'll see pictures of it in a moment. Well, classically, it's a bullseye, but not always. So right from the beginning, Lyme is vague. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Where it lives, where it goes, and what it does is so variable, it is endlessly confusing to the people that have it and the doctors that try to work with it, cure it, create therapy, even create diagnosis for it. So one thing about Lyme, it's transmitted by a tick, the deer tick. That's not all ticks. There's many types of ticks. You'll see in a moment on the site, I've put pictures of the deer tick as opposed to other types of ticks that aren't known to transmit Lyme disease. But classically, you get it from a deer tick, and classically, it creates some type of redness in the initial phase. Most of the time, it'll create symptoms. Those symptoms will be fatigue, maybe joint pain, listlessness. You know something's wrong with your body. Eventually, if it's not taken care of, it goes into deeper tissues. It goes into the organs. The thing about Lyme is it's a morpher. It's like phantom. And this is where modern understanding of microbes, reflecting ancient understanding of microbes, and I'll explain in a moment, is kind of cutting edge over the last 15 years. Lyme morphs. What you think Lyme is, it's not. Where you think it is, it's not. The minute you hit it where it is, it moves somewhere else. There's lots of places to hide in the human body. So Lyme will go from the blood, where obviously it starts out. When you get a tick bite, that means Lyme is starting out in your blood. Now, where it goes from your blood can be extremely variable. It can go to the joints. It can go to the nervous system. It can ultimately end up in every cell of the body. It can invade many organs. And if you look at the lists later on, you're going to see lists and lists and lists of all the ways this thing can attack, which makes it very confusing and very depressing for people who have gone where? Gone into the chronic stages. This is where prevention is so important. You guys out there in the holistic community, this is something you don't mess with holistically. Initially, you don't mess with it holistically. You think you get Lyme, you do the tests, the doctor says you have Lyme, you take the antibiotics and take the antibiotics in large dosages. Take aggressive antibiotic therapy. And you know what? If you're relatively healthy and you catch it early within the first month and your IgMs, I'll get into the tests later on. I don't want to spend too much time on the tests because you can get that information anywhere. But you got to get it early. That's in the first month or so. And you got to be relatively strong. In other words, your terrain, hint, hint, your terrain has to be all ready for the organism. In other words, your terrain has to be all ready to kill the organism. Your terrain has to be in a place where the organism can't thrive too long. And if it's not, this is what happens. If it's not, it gets the edge on you. If it gets the edge on you, it's given time then to start to go and hide. That's when Lyme goes chronic. Now, the problem with chronic is now it's starting to do something that you'll see cited in many of the articles that I'll be putting up. Once it goes chronic, it starts to swap genes. It starts to mutate within itself. Now, this is something that surprised microbiology. They weren't used to these microorganisms creating new strains of themselves in response to the environments that we threw at it. So you can throw your antibiotics at it. And if the antibiotics don't really get it, if your body's not strong enough in combination with the antibiotics to take it out, it gives it enough time to start to recombine genetically. And I'll show you articles where that's just considered sacrosanct now. That's not considered any big news about Lyme. Lyme morphs all the time. It swaps its own genes internally. Or who knows what. Another thing Lyme does is it buries itself in all sorts of snot piles we call biofilms. Biofilm is just a loose term for mucus. It's a mucopolysaccharide sac that at a certain point will provide an armor, a shield, so that the infection, if it's even the infection it was, you don't really know what's in a biofilm. A biofilm can simply be an agreement of multiple corporations of infection in the body that all come together to shield themselves in a big community where they synergize their relationships to protect themselves against you. It's you versus the biofilm. Once Lyme has gone into the chronic biofilm stage, you have big trouble. And that's what you see out there. That's kind of what's made Lyme famous. If Lyme were simply a slam dunk, you get the tick bite, you go to the doctor gives you the ELISA test and then the Western blot. He looks at your IgGs, your IgMs. Your IgMs are your acute phase antibody. Your IgGs are your chronic. In that first month or two, your IgMs are going to go way up. Then your IgGs are going to follow. And the clinical picture supports the blood work. And maybe you even had the rash. You got Lyme. If that's all it took, and for many people, that's all it takes. People get Lyme. Lyme is not the scourge for a fairly healthy person. But there's a ton of people that do not meet the demand. And that's going to surprise you, because that doesn't mean sick, old, frail, dying people. It means young people. It means a certain type of a person who presents with a terrain that that microbe is going to capitalize on, and I'll get more specific. There's certain things I have seen in 20 years, tons of people suffer with chronic Lyme, and they stay suffering. And I do this show today because I don't really think they ever get the right perspective, the right handle on it. So I speak especially to those of you who suffer from chronic Lyme. And of course, then all the romance of the other infections, the Babesia, the Bartonella, and all these Lyme co-infections. And, you know, if you study medicine, you see these spiralings or these blossomings of knowledge about these, you know, to microbiologists, cool new diseases, not so cool for you, that have many layers to them, tons of levels of understanding, many approaches, and then all of a sudden it's this massive syndrome that collapses on your back. All because you haven't been well schooled in some very basic fundamental principles. So this is the thing about Lyme. Lyme typifies the new infection. It's understood as a microorganism that thinks. A microorganism that morphs, that swaps genes. Not just Lyme does this, Epstein-Barr does this, chlamydia does this. You want to know something? Cancer does this. Organisms think. Cancer is a living, dynamic organism. Borrelia is a living, dynamic organism. You're playing chess. You have an entity inside you that you're playing chess with. And once these things go chronic, they've had enough time to get smart. That's why prevention is so important. That's why early attack is so important. Because early on, they're relatively dumb. All right. You've got Lyme. You go to the doctor. The doctor's going to do two tests. He's going to do what you call an ELISA test, E-L-I-S-A. If that test is negative, you can be rather assured that you don't have Lyme. If that test is positive, could be a false positive. So a false negative is something that tells you you don't have it, but you might have it. That's a false negative. False positive, it's something that tells you that you do have it, but you may not. So the plus or the minus are false in either case sometimes. So if you do the ELISA test, which is the first level of test, don't have people telling you you have Lyme from other types of tests. Don't have people telling you you have Lyme because they did a CD57. Don't have people tell you you have Lyme because you did some non-classical test at some specialty lab. And it suggests you have Lyme. And now, of course, doctors are using this term Lyme literate. They're saying that the ELISA test and the Western blot test, well, that's one level. But, of course, Isagenics, another company, makes a test that, well, may argue with the other tests. And if you're Lyme literate, then you'll understand that these other labs, these specialty labs, have insights into Lyme and that there's way more Lyme around than we thought. I really caution you, those of you who have ever been stricken or have this or think you have it, please start with the classic tests. If ELISA is positive for Lyme and Western blot shows your IgMs are high and then eventually your IgGs, and it matches, and here's the key, all tests are only tests. Even good tests like these are only tests. What you have to do is look for correlation with clinical symptomology. It's very, very, very key here. Look for correlation with symptomology. This is where a lot of people are getting ripped off out there in the holistic community. They don't have symptoms. That's the catch. Lyme can do so many things that it allows non-conventional doctors, holistic doctors, very often, I'm sorry to say, at pinning something on the back of Lyme from weak tests with small, not really substantial clinical symptomology. So Lyme is tricky. My strong advice to you from being around this for a long time is to start with classic infectious disease. If you're negative for ELISA, if you're negative for Western blot, and you only have maybe a weak symptom, like some knee pain, and somebody's telling you it's Lyme because PCR says it's Lyme, or someone on a microscope says it's Lyme, or somebody did some sort of a test that tells you, like a CD57. I had a guy come in here with bone marrow disease a number of years ago that was told he had Lyme disease. He had bone marrow disease, and he went to some doctor, and just on the basis of a CD57, which, if you don't know, is a certain test that measures the inflammatory markers, and he was told he had Lyme. He had no symptoms of Lyme. He had no other testing done. No other testing was suggested. And that's what you have to keep your eyes open. So we've got a couple of mistakes you can make. That's one of them. Go for the classic testing. Go for the early aggressive doxycycline. And there's a whole bunch of antibiotics that go after this in the early stage when it's more bloodborne. And you can get rid of it if you're relatively strong. But that's not why I did the show today. Because there's no holistic intervention. There's nothing holistic health. I mean, there is and there isn't. But really, it's the chronic situations. It's chronic disease in general. Chronic infectious disease, Lyme, we're talking about specifically now, that you really have to understand a perspective on. Chronic means 6 months, a year, 2 years. The time you've had Lyme for 1 year, 2 years, that organism's everywhere. And you're not going to get out of that with antibiotic therapy. And yet the CDC is going to tell you to manage it now with chronic antibiotic therapy. That's the end. But a lot of people have no choice, because very simply, if you have no other choice and you're in debilitating pain, and this stuff, when it goes chronic, you don't work, you don't stand up, you don't have life, it's bad. And you have no other choice but to mitigate symptomology with antibiotics. You're going to do it. It's understandable. But there are other perspectives here, and this is where the holistic perspective comes in. You have to change your terrain. Now, some of you get that. If you're new to the show, if you're driving, if you're listening, if you've got Lyme, changing your terrain, well, that's an act. That's another process. Changing your terrain. What does changing your terrain really mean? Well, if I was going to give you the common sense, straight to the point, changing your terrain means doing everything. If you knew nothing, changing your terrain would mean to do everything you've ever done or ever needed to do about getting healthy, do it at a much faster clip. Changing your terrain means getting healthy. Now, that's so non-scientific, it doesn't grab people. Your infectious disease doctors trying to work with drugs to fix chronic Lyme are not likely to tell you to get healthy. They're not likely to tell you to change your terrain. They are part of an infectious disease group who looks at kill the microbe as the answer. And as science, pharmaceutical science, as the National Institutes of Health gives hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to doctors to try to figure out and concoct new syntheses of new drugs to go in and kill Lyme, well, infectious disease is going to continue to do that. So the notion of terrain, changing the terrain to mitigate the course of a disease, isn't what they're going to tell you. The truth is, once it goes chronic, it will outwit everything you throw at it. And we've got to come to terms with this as a consciousness, that these microbes can swap genes faster than we can come up with drugs. That is the reality. They change forms, they run, they hide, they're smart. Our drugs are dead. They're dead entities. They don't go into the body in dynamic flux. The virus, the parasite, the bacteria lives in our body in dynamic flux. It adapts. It thinks. It's been around billions of years, perhaps, at least hundreds of millions of years, and it knows how to shift what you throw at it, it adapts to. That is a very unfair predicament. No, it's not us as Homo sapien, living, thinking, dynamic organism versus some dumb little microbe. That's not where the war is. The war is between our dumb drug, our single-tiered drug, our one-dimensional compound that can't think in the middle of the fight. Two fighters meet in the ring and go 15 rounds. Every second of that 15 rounds, each fighter is reacting and thinking in response to the opponent. That's not what happens when you put a drug in a human body to go after a microbe. It's one side. The organism thinks, the drug can't. The drug can only do what the drug was designed to do. If the drug could think, it would be a different story. drugs don't think. Drugs simply deploy what they were given to do, and that's it. Very unfair. Very unfair to the person. Very unfair to put the war against the microbe on the back of the drug. Now, the point. If you go back in time to when microbiology began, back in the 1850s, there were men, they were extremely credentialed men, who were at war with the coming perception, with the up-and-coming perception of what we call microbiology. In the 1850s, when Pasteur delivered his microbial theories, we were set on a path to kill and destroy the microbe. To kill and destroy the microbe. If you could find the microbe, you could kill the microbe. And that could be successful. And Pasteur had success. The problem with Pasteur and his approach, is that it was limited. But it was effective, and so startlingly effective when it was effective, that nobody challenged it, because it was better than nothing. And it didn't appear like there was any other option. So the Pasteurian model grew in Western America. It grew in Europe. It was funded, the Pasteurian model, kill the Lyme disease, kill the cancer, kill the smallpox, kill the microbe. It was supported, monetarily speaking, by the Rockefellers. Pasteur got his institute, and surely Pasteur helped a percentage of people who had smallpox, rabies, and sorts of other diseases. What's been lost to history, what we don't read about, are the men at that time who disagreed. The men at that time who were highly credentialed. The men at that time who had just as much experience, just as much fame, just as much knowledge, who strongly disagreed with Pasteur, who were saying Pasteur and this notion of kill the microbe, it's at the exclusion of the terrain. Claude Bernard, Beauchamp, Enderlin, Virchow, there were hosts of people at that time. Microbiology had an internal war at the time. Now, this is so important for you to understand. It's so important for you to understand because today, overlooking, and our institutions overlook the importance of what it means to change the terrain, organisms like Lyme, who once they go to the chronic stage, develop an effective intelligence against anything we throw at it, is failed to be attacked by all the radical things that you can do to change your terrain. So, changing the terrain. I'm having a technical problem. If you would hang on just 1 second. Okay, sorry about that. It's some sort of an internet issue today. Bear with me. I think we've got that in order now. The terrain, then. The terrain was used as an argument against Pasteur. The terrain never won. Because Pasteur lived in a time when, well, his country was France. And when the smallpox epidemic swept through France back in the 1850s, 1860s, somewhere between 1850 and 1900, people who might otherwise have changed the terrain suffered because you have to have money to change a terrain. If you have to change your terrain, if you have to get healthy and you don't have the financial resources to do so, which is, of course, what the case was in many of the neighborhoods of southern France, many of the people, many of the peasants weren't in a position. If you lived in a city back in the 1850s, 1860s, you were not in a position to do anything about your terrain. You barely made a life for yourself. You may have worked extremely long hours. The social history has great commentary on ultimately why this occurred. Hang on just 1 second. I'm so sorry. Okay. We're having technical problems today. I'm trying to get through to my tech staff. Hang on 1 second. Okay. All right, I think we've got it together now. My tech woke up. Sorry about that. All right, if you go to the website, straighttalk.cc, now you can see the complete slew of pictures today. And I'll refer to those in a few moments. So, the concept now. We have been given a terrain excluded perception of how to deal with infectious disease. And to change the terrain is the equivalent of what it means to get healthy. And when these models were first in argument with each other, when Pasteur and Beauchamp and Enderlin were all in controversy, if you didn't have money, you couldn't do anything. So it was very feasible then to simply use the vaccine. And that's what people did. And the extent to which the vaccine worked is the extent to which Pasteur took dominance over that 50 years. By the time the early 1900s came, the notion of the terrain had been completely buried. And this is the way it stayed, and it was further backed by, in the 1940s, antibiotic therapy. Antibiotic therapy took it to another level. Antibiotic therapy came, and people who would formerly die of acute bacterial infections, pneumonia in particular, had their lives saved. So between the Pasteurian model in the 1850s, 1860s, 1870s, and then into the 1940s when we started to mass produce antibiotics, the notion of changing the environment of the body, of actually getting healthy as a response to complicated disease, it got buried. And this is Walt Ewald's book. If you go onto the website, picture number one, that's straighttalk.cc. Picture number one, plague time. How stealth infections cause cancer, heart disease, and other deadly ailments. This is the new generation of mindset as it relates to virus, bacteria, and parasite. And this is very applicable to Lyme. So, Lyme is a microbe that thinks. Furthermore, Lyme does something that lots of infections do. clumps itself together in biofilms. Now, if you look at, if you go down and you take a look at picture, if you take a look at picture number 23, picture 23, that's a diagram trying to describe what a biofilm looks like. And again, when Lyme comes in, it may be a single free-floating bacteria, and they begin to aggregate. And when they begin to aggregate, then they begin to grow mucopolysaccharide sacs. And those sacs become larger. And as they become larger, the biofield terrain becomes more and more impregnable. So one, we have a microbe that's difficult to diagnose. Number two, we have a microbe that once it grows chronic, it can run anywhere it wants. Number three, we have a microbe that can change its genes. It can go in and swap its own genetic sequences to cope with its environment. Then number four, we have a microbe that can create relationship not only with other microbes, but also it can mat itself underneath a slimy layer that we call a biofilm. To this, we're throwing chronic, we're throwing antibiotic after antibiotic, and in its chronic stage, we lose. Well, we should have gone all the way back, and then if you look at picture number 25, go to picture 25. If you're new to the show, straighttalk.cc, not .com. That's with two T's. Ethel Hume's book, Beauchamp or Pasteur, citing the war that occurred. And Beauchamp wasn't off the street. He was just as educated. He was joined by Claude Bernard. Look at the Bernard quote. Go to picture 33. Look at the Bernard quote. The terrain is everything. The germ is nothing. The terrain is everything. The germ is nothing. Claude Bernard was as big as it gets. Those guys understood. Virchow, picture 35. Dr. Rudolf Virchow, the father of modern pathology. If I could live my life over again, I would devote it to proving that germs seek their natural habitat, diseased tissue, rather than germs being the cause of dead tissue. Listen to that. The father of modern pathology, Dr. Rudolf Virchow. If I could live my life over again, I would devote it to proving. This is where Beauchamp left off. This is what Enderlin was saying. I would devote it to proving that germs go after dead tissue. This is where Ewald has kind of made a mistake. Whether they resurrected old work or whether their technologies allowed lots, whether their technologies illuminated the presence of microbes in diseased tissue. The point wasn't that the germs caused the disease. It wasn't that microbes cause plaque or renal failure necessarily. It was the other way around, that germs are found in low resonance areas of the body. In other words, germs seek diseased tissue. You got to go back in time. You have to understand that these scientists were far less jaded, that things were much more simple, that you really could get to the truth with less bureaucracy, less politics, less pressure from organized institutions. It wasn't perfect. Man always has that tendency. But I assure you, if you study medicine over the last few hundred years, even further back, there's a cleanliness to it that fades today. These pioneers approached and analyzed from many perspectives, and it wasn't about pressure from pharmaceutical companies or otherwise. It was just that they were driven from that wonderful curiosity to know reality. So, of course, why aren't you with chronic Lyme, chronic Epstein-Barr, cancer, autoimmune disease, anything hooked to anything resembling infectious, being told this? That's the answer to another show. But the fact is that men at one time, good scientists, scientists who have lived through the centuries, had very strong commentary. There's Reich, picture 34. Reich was right there. Picture 34 in the middle, that's Wilhelm Reich. Medical doctor, a psychiatrist, ultimately an individual who understood that the body is an electromagnetic field. And now we move to another level. You see, when you look at picture 36. Picture 36 is the life cycle of polymorphic microorganisms. That was how Virchow, that was how Nessens, that is how Rife, that is how Bernard, that is how Enderlin understood your Lyme. That Lyme, as it morphs, is part of a morphic cycle. And that if we don't respect that, we're never going to come to the conclusion that you have to change the terrain to embargo the organism. Your sleep, the love in your life, your emotional life, the cleanses from the kidney to the liver to the skin, how you've decongested your lymph, every single indice of health is what I mean by what it means to change the terrain. And these guys were saying, as you change the terrain, the morphic cycle will move into the regulatory stage of the organism rather than the pathological stage of the organism. Now, that is a microbiology that's coming down the pipe today. It only reflects what was once understood and buried, and this is the way lots of science goes. It goes in cycles. We get it, we lose it, we get it, we lose it. It's understandable, and this is what I was trying to say earlier, it's understandable that the polymorphic cycle or the terrain perspective of Virchow and Beauchamp, etc., was lost to Pasteur. It's understandable because to change the terrain is a devotion. To get healthy is a devotion. You have to be in a position to do that. We here in America, many of us are afforded that luxury. But when you're talking to a population of people who live in ghettos, who aren't in that position, who struggle just to barely exist, and then on top of that, you ask them for the amount of time, money, and energy it takes to devote themselves to changing the terrain, it's a lost cause. So why not take a vaccine? Pasteur spearheaded vaccine therapy. Vaccine therapy, of course, in great dispute today. No doubt, to some extent, vaccine therapy worked. No doubt, to some extent, vaccine therapy created disease. Vaccine therapy, even then, was very controversial. If you go back, and here's a book you should really get and read. It will really change your worldview. And that's picture 25. Ethel Hume's book. This book came out in the 20s. Beauchamp or Pasteur, a lost chapter in the history of really microbiology. You read that book, you'll see the statistics behind, right from the beginning, the success in vaccines were blurry. And they're blurry today. But the point is, there was credible perception in the terrain camp, telling the vaccine camp that you're missing the point. Well, now we pay for it. We pay for it today with chronic Lyme disease. If you have chronic Lyme disease and you've taken antibiotics and you're still spinning in circles, there are big chunks of the game that you're missing. If you're listening today and you're saying, okay, well, what do I do? What's the plan? Over a radio show in 60 minutes, I can tell you to get healthy. Now, you may think that's a superficial answer, but if you consider the amount, of information, if you consider the amount of knowledge that we already possess, that's out there on the internet, that's on YouTube, that are in books, that fill bookstores, shelf to shelf to shelf, and you were to simply systematically bring yourself, forget the disease. Now, there's a heresy. There is a counterintuitive statement. Forget the symptoms of Lyme. Forget the microbe. Forget the disease. Focus on your health. See, it's the philosophy, it's the theology around disease that stops people from healing. They fail to have perspective that works in the trenches. What you have to embrace here is if you're lost in chronic disease, you have to embrace health and not focus on your symptomology. Now, that may not be easy to do, but that's what you have to do. You have to focus on getting healthy, changing the terrain. There comes a point when the terrain changes to the point where Lyme doesn't have an environment to live in. All 280 plus of my shows, all of everything on YouTube, on internet, there's a certain point where everyone's almost saying the same thing. There are indices of health that are important for you to follow. And really, the basics of health aren't that complicated. There's not much debate. There's debate, but not much debate. Not the kind of debate that would stop you from getting to the second or third base of your health. In other words, there's not enough debate in holistic medicine to stop you, the consumer, from moving to a very healthy state. Lots of us agree on lots of things. And on that basis, there's so much you can do. Rest assured that along that path, you are pressuring relentlessly Lyme and whatever microorganism you're talking about to a hostile terrain. You're bringing it to a terrain it doesn't like. And this is what Beauchamp and Virchow and Bernard and Enderlin and Nessens and Reif were all saying. Now, above all, I'm going to spend a few minutes on this. Above all, what you bring to shifting those polymorphic, intelligent organisms into oblivion or into a non-pathological state, what you deploy is the autonomic nervous system. You hear me harp on this all the time. If you're new to the show, perhaps this is the first time. We rarely hear nutrition. If you took all the nutritional shows in all the states of America today, 7 days a week, they talk about the power of the herb. They talk about why you should buy this herb because it's better than another herb. Or whatever they do, people tout the power of the herb. Do you understand how superficial that is as it relates to combating an organism like Lyme? You're looking for an herbal program. You're looking for a pharmaceutical drug. You're not looking for health. You're looking for singular, single-layered attacks on multi-layered, multi-intelligent organisms. The only system in your body that can morph, that can orchestrate a shift as fast as the organism, is the nervous system. And this is why we fail. And if there's one thing you get out of today's show, it's to understand that we fail. We fail nutritional therapy. We fail pharmaceutical therapy. We consistently fail to effectively combat complicated intelligent organisms, Lyme being one of the most famous. because we don't really understand what it is to bring the full power of the parasympathetic nervous system to the immune system. The parasympathetic nervous system is the catalyst to spin a web of intelligence, a fabric of intelligence, into the immune system to make it as smart as the microbe. If a microbe can morph its genes, if a microbe can adapt, so can we. Even parasympathetic dumb, we are adaptable. But if you fully employ, if you go on the journey to understand what it is to use the autonomic nerves, you'll find that we have highly sophisticated, more sophisticated levels than we understand at bringing combat, neutralization, and dominance to any microbe. Now, that is why many people beat Lyme. Many people are balanced already. Many people come in to an illness ready to heal. And that's when, whether you're using herbs, whether you're using pharmaceutical drugs, those chemicals, whether they're from nature or synthesized in a lab, those chemicals are finding a terrain within you that is backed up by the neurological system. I have yet to see a single person with chronic Lyme come in with a balanced nervous system. And what people make the mistake of saying, and catch this because it's so important, what people make the mistake of saying is that anyone that's had chronic Lyme is going to be completely stressed, completely drained, completely flipped upside down. I tell you, this is a misconception. These people have been attacked and ravaged long before they got Lyme, consistently across the board. Every time you see chronic Epstein-Barr, all the manifestations of chlamydia, chronic Lyme disease, so on and so forth, you're looking at people who have been ravaged emotionally, kicked around and abused long before they ever knew they had the disease. I submit that to you. On this day, it's the most important thing that you can get from the show. Because it would change, if we could honor this, the entire course of therapy. You there with chronic Lyme, looking for someone to spin a new herbal combination or give you a health program in the sense of how we change the diet and how we change the herbal program. You there looking for a new wonder drug, a new pharmaceutical antibiotic that'll knock down and destroy the biofilm and break it open and eat all the Lyme, and it's a year, 2 years, 5 years, it's 10 years. I have seen these cases so many times. Again, the issue is, you have to ask yourself, long before you got the disease, what your life was like. And I guarantee you, if you're honest with yourself, you'll find that autonomically speaking, if I can use those terms for my regular listeners, I'm sure I can, you were way out of balance. Go to picture 37. There's a schematic, picture 37, of the autonomic nervous system. That parasympathetic nervous system on the left through the vagus nerve, that is the intelligence that the brain brings to all those immune system cells that eat Lyme. Lyme is a bacteria. Are macrophages, are they supercharged? Can the hypothalamus through the marrow, where the immune system cells are made, or the thymus? Can the hypothalamus, through the immune system, through the nervous system, through the vagus nerve, direct a response out of the bone marrow, out of the thymus gland, out of the spleen, to deploy all available macrophages to produce through the bone marrow hordes more to go after the organism in early phase? Can we create an antibody attack? So on and so forth. Can all the immune system warriors do their dance at an optimal level? Or are they asleep? And of course, this is all controlled through the nervous system. This is why if you keep your ear to the ground and you see people who've been ravaged by chronic Lyme, you can see where the fault is. So balance to the autonomic system and an understanding of how to change the terrain. That's all 280 plus of my shows. To balance the autonomic nervous system, to know what it is to deploy the vagus, to shift the terrain through the cleanses, through nutrification, to dissolve the webbed fibrin to the bone, and to electrify it with more optimal frequencies through the vagus nerve. You bring that to however intelligent a microbe attacks you, and you will see victory if you persist. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. If you're lost and spinning in the labyrinth of a very confusing health model, give us a call. 714-850-1007. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.